Good evening. This is Lamar Alexander, and thank you for joining us. This is a new experience for me. We call this a teletown hall meeting, and it's an opportunity for you to ask me questions and me to try to answer those questions. Basically, on the line, we have a large number of people from Middle Tennessee and East Tennessee. So let me start with something that's on my mind, and I imagine on yours, because I think it is on that of most Tennesseans, and then I'll turn it over and see what questions you'd like to ask me. Let me start with gas prices. I guess every week, at least, I go to the Senate floor and I read letters from Tennesseans who've emailed me or written me about how high gas prices are affecting their lives. I think of one young Marine from Johnson City who wrote me and said he'd been waiting a year and a half to come home to have a vacation with his young wife and their baby, and when he got back, the price of gasoline was so difficult that they couldn't afford to take the trip that they'd hoped to take. And I'm sure you have your own story, just as most Tennesseans do. So the question is, what should we do about it? Well, I believe I can sum it up in four words. I'd call that find more and use less. I think most Tennesseans are wise enough to know that there's no instant solution to this, but we ought to start today to find more oil. That means offshore exploration, for example. We have plenty of oil off our shores, and we can drill for it in safe and environmental ways. We can do it 40 miles out to sea. You couldn't even see the drilling equipment. And a second way to produce a lot more oil is oil shale in four western states. Just those two efforts would produce about 3 million more barrels of oil a day. One way to think about it is that would increase the United States production of oil by about one-third. And then on the other side, we need to start using less. We use 25% of all the oil in the world in the United States, and if we cut our oil imports by one-third, we would save another 4 million barrels, and together those two actions would cut in half the amount of imported oil that's coming into our country. Now, that's a lot of money, $250 billion a year that we're sending overseas to countries, some of whom are sponsoring terrorists who don't like us. It would help to reduce the price. And you might ask, well, what could we do to use that much less oil? One way to do it is to make commonplace electric cars and pickup trucks. Now, I made a commencement speech at Tennessee Tech a few weeks ago, and I said that I thought most of the graduates at Tech within 5 years would be driving electric plug-in cars and trucks to work, and I think some people thought I'd been out in the sun a little bit long. But the fact of the matter is Nissan, Toyota, Ford, General Motors, they're all going to be selling these within a year, and the way you do it is you just plug the car in at night, you charge it up just like you would your cell phone, except it's larger, and then the next day you can drive 30 or 40 miles without using any gasoline. Of course, the car has another engine in it, which is what a hybrid car is, like a Toyota Prius, for example, and it switches over to the gasoline engine when you used up the electric charge. But about 75% of American people drive less than 40 miles a day in their cars or their pickups, and so that would mean that they could probably fill up their car for about 60 cents worth of electricity at night instead of $100 at the gas pump. Now, I know that in rural Tennessee, you're going to drive more than 40 miles, and that's where high gas prices are hurting more than anywhere. But still, a car or a pickup truck that plugged into electricity would save a lot of money. And you might ask, well, where are you going to get all that electricity? Turns out TVA has a lot of unused electricity at night, and therefore, they could sell that to us in a cheap way. So our goal should be to find more oil and use less oil. You can probably think of other ways to do it, and we ought to start immediately. And the last thing I'd say about it is still you might say, well, what's that going to do tomorrow? And the truth is, it's not going to change the price of gasoline tomorrow, and anybody who tells you it will isn't telling the truth. But I believe from the day the United States announces a new Manhattan Project for clean energy independence and lets the world know that we're going to aggressively search for more oil, build more nuclear power plants, stop using as much oil. From that day, the speculators will begin to get nervous and the oil-producing countries will get real and the price of gas will stabilize and begin to go down. So I'm working hard here in Washington in a bipartisan way, not just with Republicans, but with Democrats as well as Republicans, to say, let's pass legislation this month that puts us on a track to clean energy independence. At least let's take the first step with offshore exploration, with oil shale, and then on the other side with incentives to Tennesseans so that those who want to can begin to drive plug-in electric cars and pickup trucks and stop using so much gas. Now, let me stop talking and go to a question, and let's take our first question. And if you'd give, if you'd say your name and your hometown when you ask the question, I'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Senator. We're going to hear from Charles first. Charles, go ahead.
Yes, Senator. Why don't we quit this silliness that the 20 unknown number of millions of aliens cannot be removed from the country? I agree they cannot, but that doesn't mean they will not leave. Our tax code has been used for everything else. Why not a simple regulation requiring only preponderance of evidence that says any person who knowingly or, key word, willfully disregards a person's illegal status may not deduct the cost of such employment as a business expense? You just removed the magnet that draws them. You just removed the incentive to hire the illegal aliens.
Well, Charles, that's a really interesting idea. That's the first time I've heard that suggestion, and I think it's a good one. And I think you've put your finger right on the problem. The jobs are the magnet. Now, I had been thinking of it from a different direction. I'm for a secure work card, which it would take some time for everybody to have one, but in today's world, it shouldn't be very easy. We have credit cards that are secure. I've got a card that says I'm a senator that's secure. Military people have secure cards. We have secure passports. So everyone who works would have a secure work card, the kind that would be very difficult to fake or duplicate. And then we could say to employers, there's no excuse for you to hire someone who's not legally in the United States. And perhaps then you'd want to add on your suggestion about you couldn't deduct the cost of employment from that. But the difficulty right now is that it's difficult even for some employers who are trying hard to follow the law to tell whether anybody's here legally or not because of the fraudulent identity cards. And I think a secure work card, maybe a secure Social Security card for that purpose, would go a long way toward, as you say it, removing the magnet that causes illegal people to come here. We're a nation of immigrants. We need to welcome students and workers and people who contribute to our economy, but they have to be here legally and they have to learn English. And if they're going to be a citizen, they have to become an American.
Thank you, Senator. For those of you who are still joining us, please press 0 if you have a question for Senator Alexander. Our next question is going to be from Beaufort in Peterstown.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about health care for seniors. It's difficult for us to get the proper health care, even though we've got insurance.
Well, that's exactly right. Thank you for the question. We've been talking about health care this week and Medicare particularly. One of the things that we've been let me answer that in two ways. We've been debating this week, and we decided to protect Medicare and to continue to offer something called Medicare Advantage, which is a version of Medicare that is especially helpful to people who live in rural areas. It means that it encourages competition so that doctors can live and work and serve patients in rural areas where people often have a hard time finding doctors or doctors who will serve Medicare patients. So that's one thing we can do. A second thing that we can do, and I'm the co-sponsor of legislation with several Democrats, and this is one of my top priorities, is to change the tax code to make it possible for every single American to be able to afford to buy at least a basic health insurance plan. We would do that by a change in the tax code, but basically it'd give each American several thousand dollars a year, which could only be used to buy a health insurance program. And there are some people who say, well, we want to give everybody the opportunity to do that through the government. I would prefer a system that allows you to choose your own policy and choose your own doctor. And we have seven Democrat senators and seven Republican senators who have joined on a health care bill we call the Wyden-Bennett bill. And I'm hopeful that that will be the first order of business when we come back into session at the beginning of the year with a new president and a new Congress. Thank you for a terrific question.
Thank you, sir. And for those of you who are still joining us, please press zero to ask a question of Senator Alexander. Our next caller is John from Jasper, Tennessee. John?
Oh, I got to ask it again. Okay. My question, Senator, is about switchgrass. I've read in the paper about the University of Tennessee doing studies on switchgrass, and I notice we have a lot of ground between the interstates to grow switchgrass. Could you update me on what's going on along those lines?
I sure can, John. And I have to give some credit to Governor Bredesen and to the University of Tennessee as well as the Tennessee Farm Bureau, because they're putting Tennessee in a position to be a leader on growing switchgrass in Tennessee, and then turning that into fuel that can be used in cars and trucks. Now, most people have heard about ethanol that's made from corn, and a lot of Tennesseans have been doing that, and corn prices are up. But that's caused some problems because we eat corn, and it's right, and that increases food prices. The idea is to have advanced biofuels, as we call it, made from crops that we don't eat. And switchgrass is one of those. It's actually much more efficient to turn switchgrass into energy, that is a form of ethanol that we can use in our cars and trucks, than it is to use corn. So there's going to be a new ethanol plant built up around Vonore in East Tennessee, which will be one of the first plants in the United States for that purpose. And the Oak Ridge Laboratory, the University of Tennessee, with some money provided by the governor and the legislature in Tennessee, are going to be doing a lot of research on switchgrass. And in fact, the University of Tennessee has sort of cornered the market on switchgrass seed, I understand, because it takes 2-3 years to grow a particular kind of switchgrass that can be used most efficiently to turn into energy. So it's one way to lower the price of fuel for our cars and trucks and put some more money into the pockets of farmers or people in rural areas who have some extra land on which they could grow switchgrass. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. For those of you who are still joining us, please press zero to ask a question of Senator Alexander. Our next question is going to be from William from Harriman, Tennessee.
All right. You know, we're talking about the diesel and the gas prices. Diesel's a byproduct in this whole deal, and the oil companies are charging us more. You know, kerosene's higher, diesel's higher, and they were pushing, get a diesel truck, do better, and that's costing us more. We're over in a war that we're paying for, the American people are paying for, to take care of the oil of another country, which we should have went in there and said, we're going to buy your oil at what it is now that we're in here defending you, and we're going to send that oil to America, and we'll keep paying for you the price it was to begin with until everything settles, the money that you'd owe us.
Well, that's a good suggestion. The talking about, of course, about Iraqi oil. Of course, the best thing to do would be to stop importing so much oil from other countries, and by using less oil and producing more of our own oil. There was a time not so long ago, 20 or 30 years ago, when maybe 70% of all of the oil that we used came from the United States. It's that way today with natural gas. With natural gas, about 97% of our natural gas either comes from the United States, and a little bit of that comes from Canada. So we're not hostage to Iraq or Iran or Venezuela or any of these other countries, and we're not sending money overseas that we could be using to pay to Americans. So I think the only way to deal with this is to start today to find more oil and gas. And we can do that on the outer continental shelf, and we can do it in an environmentally sensitive way. We can do that with oil shale. We can produce more energy in nuclear plants so that if we begin to drive electric cars and pickup trucks, which don't use oil or don't use much oil, we can have clean electricity to put in there. And then we can cut in half over time the amount of oil we import, and not only reduce the price but reduce our dependence on other countries.
Thank you, sir. And for those of you who are just joining us, if you'd please press 0 to ask a question of Senator Alexander. Our next question is going to be from Michael and Harriman.
Yes. My name is Michael Russell, and I'm a sick worker from the K-25 plant. And I know that you have been involved in the Energy Employees Compensation Program Act. And I have been 8 years now dealing with this issue. I was one of the first to help actually enact the program. And even though I've met all of the requirements that they have asked on the program, and each time that I meet their requirements, they continually give me more requirements to meet. And each time that I do that, they either lose my paperwork or something to their benefit. And I know this isn't new news that you have heard of such, but how does one take and overcome these issues to show that you actually have a work-related toxic exposure?
Okay, thank you very much for calling. And for those on the call who don't know about this, this is a very tough issue. These are the sick workers that we're talking about are really our Cold War warriors. The men and women who worked, in our case, in and around Oak Ridge, you're from Harriman, so you're not far away, who thought they were working in a safe environment, and it turned out that they weren't. And so a law was passed to say that the federal government, the taxpayers, will compensate those people for their illnesses. When I became a senator 5-6 years ago, I found a huge backup of claims. And so I joined with Senator Bunning of Kentucky and others, and we transferred the responsibility of those claims from the Department of Energy to the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor was doing a much better job. And I think things have gotten better for most people. Tennessee has twice the number of people in the program and has received twice the compensation dollars compared to any other state. But I know that for individuals such as yourself, you run into problems. So here's what I'm going to suggest. I have an office in Knoxville, which I would ask you to call tomorrow, and I can give you a telephone number. It's 865-545-4253. I'll give that to you again in just a second. And what that office is for is to help with questions like that. And I can't guarantee you that we can fix the problem, but we'll be glad to go through the claim that you filed, and if there are any runaround that you're getting, or if there are forms that are missing, or if people aren't returning your phone calls, we can surely make sure that happens. So I hope very much that you'll call our office, 865-545-4253, in the morning, and we'll go right to work on it and see if I can help.
For those of you who are just joining the call, please press 0 to talk to Senator Alexander. Our next call is going to be Jimmy from Estill Springs.
Jimmy? Yes, this is Beverly, Jimmy's wife. And what we were interested in with the situation with the oil and gas, we feel like it's a multifaceted thing where we could start process of drilling now and work on saving. What is your opinion on the drilling everywhere?
Beverly, thank you for the question. The short answer is I'm for it. I think it is ridiculous that our country, which uses a quarter of all the oil in the world and is the third largest producer in the world, has stopped ourselves from producing as much oil and gas as we can. Now, I said to a caller a little earlier that I know the problem we have that's hurting Americans is a problem of supply and demand. We have not as much oil as we need, and we have more demand for it in the world than we did. And so the only solution for that is to find more and to use less. And the way to start finding more is to allow deep shore, deep sea exploration off our coast the way we do now with Texas and Louisiana and Alabama and Mississippi. If North Carolina and Virginia and Florida want to do it, they should be allowed to do it. And that would increase our amount of oil. We could, if we did that and oil shale, just those two things, the oil shale is in four western states, we could increase United States production of oil by one-third. Now, it will take, like it does every other thing, time to do that. But we ought to start today. I mean, 10 years ago, the Congress said we should start drilling in Alaska for oil, where we have plenty of oil in Alaska. And the president at that time, President Clinton, vetoed that. If he hadn't, we'd have a million more barrels of oil a day for a country that only produces about 8 million barrels of oil a day. So I'm for finding more and using less, and the sooner we start, the better. And I also think that while there's no magic solution to gas prices, that the sooner we say to the world we're going to use more, find more oil and use less oil through such things as driving plug-in electric cars and trucks, which Nissan, Ford, General Motors, and other companies are going to have on the market very quickly, then I think the speculators will get nervous and the countries that produce oil will get realistic and the price of oil will stabilize and it'll go down.
For those of you who are just joining us, please press 0 to ask a question of Senator Alexander. Our next question is going to be from Greg and Oliver.
Yes, sir. I'd like to know what your time frame for reducing the number of troops now involved in the struggle in Iraq.
Well, I don't believe in a specific timetable. I think it has to come only as conditions on the ground permit. But about a year ago, I joined with Senator Salazar of Colorado, a Democrat, and 17 other United States senators, and urged the president to adopt the recommendations of the Iraq Study Group, which was a bipartisan group that was set up, half Democrats, half Republicans. And they urged that we get on a path to change the mission of our troops in Iraq from combat to support, that we increase our diplomatic efforts in the Middle Eastern in the Middle Eastern region. And the president and the Congress wouldn't agree to do that, but that's basically what General Petraeus has done with his counterinsurgency. So I believe General Petraeus is today on a path that will reduce the number of United States troops in Iraq on a steady basis. If another brigade comes out of Iraq at the end of this month, we'll be down to about 135 or 140,000 troops there. In half the provinces in Iraq, the role of Americans there have shifted from combat to support. I keep up every day with the casualty lists from Tennessee. We've had so many Tennesseans in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's rare now that I get a report of a Tennessee casualty. And a year or two ago, I was getting them on a regular basis. That's encouraging to me. So the Iraq Study Group recommendations that I supported a couple of years ago suggested that if we shifted missions, that most of our troops would be out, except for those that were still there for a continuing mission, within about a year. I believe we'll have substantial reductions of our troops in Iraq over the next 12 months, and I believe that will be good for the United States. I believe it will be good for Iraq, and it'll be very good for our overstressed armed forces who've been involved in tours that are longer than they should be. By the way, I'm going to Clarksville tomorrow afternoon for a ceremony honoring Chief Warrant Officer David Cooper, who's stationed in Clarksville. He's receiving the second highest award that any soldier can receive, the Distinguished Service Cross, for bravery there. We've had an incredible participation by Tennesseans in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I'm glad to see that more troops are coming out than are going in, and I hope that continues and that it accelerates.
Thank you. For those of us who are still joining, please press zero if you'd like to ask a question of Senator Alexander. Our next question is going to be from Jimmy in Sparta, Tennessee.
Hello, when are they going to finish the Mexican border fence? It's to keep out the illegals. It looks to me like they stopped building it.
Well, thank you for the question. They're continuing to build it. They're running into some trouble getting the land to build it. That's part of the problem. But the Mexican border fence is being built on a portion of that border. Now, that's a long border. It might be, I forget the mileage, actually. I think it's about 1,500 miles. And the way to make sure that people who are in the United States are legally here includes building a fence. I've supported funding to build a fence and to secure the border. The fence at San Diego's proved to be effective, and based upon that, that's being expanded, and they're continuing to build it. But there's some other things we need to do and are doing. For example, the guardsmen who went to the border for the last couple of years, including Tennessee guards, made a big difference in supporting the Border Patrol. In addition to that, we've about double the size of the Border Patrol over that two-year period of time. And as I told a caller a little earlier, I think we need a secure work card, which would be a Social Security card. So if you get a job in Tennessee, and if you're an employer, you can ask somebody, well, show me your secure Social Security card before I hire you. Right now, it's hard for employers to know for sure if you're legally here or not, because it's so easy to fake ID cards and identification cards. And I think over time, if we had a secure work card, that most people who tried to come here illegally would not be able to get a job, and that would be a part of how we make sure that people who are in the United States are legally here.
For those of you who are just joining us, please press zero to ask a question of Senator Alexander. The next question will be from Bobby in Manchester, Tennessee.
Yes. Could you help us with the Medicare and our medicines?
Well, the best way to help with Medicare and medicine, well, the first thing was one of the first things I did, and I'll have to give former Senator Bill Frist a lot of the credit for this. When I campaigned for the Senate 6 years ago, I said I wanted to make as a part of Medicare prescription drugs. Because at that time, prescription drugs weren't a part of Medicare. And we had a pretty big fight about that in the Congress, but we did it. And now, it's one of the most popular federal programs that we have. Most seniors have signed up for it. Almost all who have are happy with it. It's costing less than we thought because it gives people more choices. So the single most important thing we could do to help with medicine was to create a part of Medicare, which we call Part D, which helps pay for prescription drugs. That didn't even exist 4 years ago. A second thing that we did as a part of that was to create something called Medicare Advantage, which is especially helpful in the rural areas because it gives seniors a choice of the kind of program they sign up for. Medicare is a very good program if there are plenty of doctors around who serve Medicare patients. But you might be in a rural area or a less populated area where there are not as many doctors, and you might like to join a different plan. And the Medicare Advantage gives you a chance to choose a second plan. So those are two things that the Congress has done and that we're watching very closely to try to be helpful.
If you're just joining us, please press zero to ask a question of Senator Alexander. The next question is going to be from Mary Ellen in Sparta.
Yes, first I'd like to say I'm really pleased to have this opportunity. And my question is kind of under a broad umbrella, but because I'm, of course, concerned as to how energy costs are going to impact me. I'm on a fixed income, and I'm concerned that the rising cost of other energy sources may cause my electricity, even though it's in a TVA program and I guess primarily a hydro type energy. So I'm looking at a new central heat and air unit, and do I go with natural gas or do I go with electricity, and which one is going to rise the least and what things are going to factor into that. And I'm also concerned about no talk about the Hartsville nuclear plant program that was started, I guess, in the 70s, and how that may factor in and impact Tennesseans.
Well, now, those are some terrific questions, and if I could answer all those, I'd probably go into the I'd probably be on television answering questions, but let me try to take them one by one in reverse. On nuclear power, TVA is doing more than any other utility in the country to build nuclear power plants again. I don't know if it'll try to do something at Hartsville, but at Watts Bar and Sequoia and Bellefonte, it is. It's just opened a new nuclear power plant, and I think they're on the right track there because nuclear power is clean, which it's going to have to be. We need clean air for our health. And once you build the plant, it's cheap, and it'll help keep your prices down. And you're correct. Because of TVA, we've had generally lower electric rates than almost every other part of the country. And we do have to be careful about increasing electric rates. Now, if you're buying natural gas or if you're buying an electric heating and cooling system, that's a really good question. I'll give you a couple of facts about it without going on too long. The price of natural gas has gone up a lot. I mean, it's gone up to about $13 a unit from $2 or $3 a unit just in the last 6 years and that's going to affect home heating and home cooling. And it could go up more. But it doesn't depend on, that's on the one side of it. On the other side, it's not like oil. We don't buy natural gas mostly from overseas. We buy almost all of it from ourselves or a little bit from Canada. And we're finding a lot more natural gas in Texas and some other places, so the price may go down. The most difficult problem we have with natural gas is we're making a lot of electricity out of it, so that tends to drive the price up. So I'm afraid the price of natural gas for the near term is going to stay pretty high, and that might affect your heating and cooling. Now, as far as electricity goes, I'm going to do my best to help keep those prices down. That's why I voted against a climate change tax bill that would have run those prices up. And I'll conclude with just one other thing. One thing you might think about if you're trying to keep your family budget under control with all these different prices, food prices, gas prices, healthcare prices, and this may sound a little far-fetched to you, but watch for the electric cars and pickup trucks over the next 2 or 3 years. General Motors is going to be having something called the Chevy Volt. Nissan, which is based in Tennessee, is going to have an all-electric car. And these cars, you can plug in at night. TVA has a lot of extra electricity at night that it'll sell to you very cheap, and you might be able to plug them in for 60 cents and be able to drive 30 or 40 miles on the 60 cents before it switches to the gasoline engine. Now, those cars are a little more expensive now because they're just getting started, but I believe that within a few years, tens of thousands of Tennesseans are going to be saving a lot of fuel money by driving hybrid electric cars and pickup trucks.
For those of you who are just joining us, if you'd like to ask a question of Senator Alexander, please press 0. Our next question is going to be from Dustin in Huntland.
Yes, Senator. I was curious about your position on higher education for middle-income families. I myself am back in college to get my RN degree, and we don't qualify for any kind of Pell or government assistance for that. And we're a family that does right, you know, takes care of our business, but want to be able to further our career.
Well, that's a great question, and you're from a great place in Huntland where the Majors family was was from over the years. We've done a lot of work. The new higher education bill, which I hope passes in the next few weeks, Senator Kennedy's illness has slowed that down a little bit, but will increase the Pell Grant amount to up to $5,400 a year. Now, the Pell Grant, it will also mean that the Pell Grant would be available to students who might not be younger or who might want to be going year-round. Up to now, you can only get the Pell Grant for two semesters a year, but nowadays, a lot of people who go back to school, for example, you mentioned sounds like you're going back to school to get your RN degree. You might be going all year round, so the Pell Grant would be available to you. You said that you might be in that position where you're earning just a little too much to qualify for a Pell Grant. And the next thing that the federal government does is try to make student loans available at a lower guaranteed rate than you'd otherwise be able to get. And I've been working hard on that the last few weeks because some of the legislation that went through Congress, plus the current economic slowdown, has raised some questions about whether those loans are going to be available in August, but I'm working hard to make sure they are. So about, I'd say half of Tennessee's college students have either a federal grant or a federal loan to help pay for college or professional training. And when you get into professional training like you're doing, it costs a little more, and that's a struggle for most people. But I admire you for what you're doing, and I would encourage anyone listening, I would remind them that community colleges, for example, are relatively inexpensive. You can live at home, and you might qualify for a Pell Grant that you're not aware of.
For those of you who are just joining, if you'd like to press zero to ask a question of Senator Alexander. The next question is from Pamela in Winchester. Pamela?
Hello? Yes. Actually, this is Jim Solomon.
Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for having this town meeting this way, Senator. I think this is a very good way to do things, but I had two things to comment on. One was the nuclear power. I think it's very important that we do that development in our country. When we have electric cars and so forth, we're just shifting the burden of power to the electrical grid, and I think we're going to have a big problem there. And then the second thing that I wanted to comment on is our Second Amendment rights. I would hope that you would be very powerful in speaking for that, especially in what I perceive to be a hostile Congress.
Jim, thank you very much for your two questions, and I'll answer them quickly. On nuclear power, I fully support it. We ought to be building, we ought to double the number of nuclear plants that we have. We ought to build five or six more a year over the next several years. It's the most reliable, cleanest technology we have today for electricity. Now, you mentioned the electric cars. One of the good things about electric cars and trucks as they come on the market is that TVA tells me that at a hearing I had the other day that they've got the equivalent of five or six nuclear power plants worth of electricity available at night that's unused. When we're all asleep, TVA's doesn't sell as much electricity. So they probably be coming to Winchester before very long trying to sell you a smart meter so that if you had a plug-in truck or car, you could plug in at night at a very cheap cost and fill up with electricity that way. But if you used your electricity between 4 p.m. and 10 p.m., it cost you more. And that means it's been estimated that we might be able to electrify half our cars and trucks in America, which would take some time and be a big change, without building any new power plants. But I agree with you. Because we need about 700 more megawatts of power every year in the TVA region, and that's about three-quarters of a new nuclear power plant every year. So we're going to have conservation and nuclear power and use of nighttime electricity all just to keep up. Now, on gun rights, I'm a strong supporter of Second Amendment rights. Always have been. Believe it's important. I think if you'll check with the NRA, they'll tell you that.
Our next call is going to be from Leslie in Tullahoma.
Hi, Senator. I have a question about the voucher system in Tennessee, and I would just like to know that if it's anything possible where parents could take their tax credit and apply it towards a private school of their choice for their child to go to. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the question. I favor that. As Secretary of Education a few years ago, I advocated it. I worked with the first President Bush to urge Congress to pass something we called a GI Bill for Kids, which would give to families a $1,500 voucher that they could take to any school, public, private, religious, of their choice. The Congress wouldn't approve that, but they did approve a program for the District of Columbia here in Washington, D.C., where Congress has an unusual jurisdiction, and have given parents here vouchers to choose among schools. Today, the Appropriations Committee, on which I serve, voted to continue that voucher program. Now, that's harder to do in Tennessee. I was never able to get it done there, but we are doing it here. I believe that children do better when parents have choices. And if I were on the school board, particularly in a larger city, but I believe anywhere, I believe I'd write the parents and say, where would you like for your child to go to school? And then I'd do my best to put them there. I think that'd be the simplest way to do it. You get a better result, and the child would be in a better environment.
Our next question is going to be from Kenneth in Huntland.
Senator, my name is Kenneth Hunter. How are you this evening?
Kenneth, I'm fine.
The reason I was going to talk to you, Senator, is because I'm a JROTC instructor for the United States Navy. I've been in that position for 15 years in Hazel Green, Alabama. And there's a lot of us instructors that have been doing this for many years. In 2006, Senator Warner attached to Title 10 saying that we all needed an associate's degree to continue on with the job that we've been doing for 15 years beyond 2011. Well, us Vietnam veterans, we don't have any means of a GI Bill anymore, so that means we're going to have to pay for this degree out of our pocket. I was wondering if there's any chance of changing that Title 10 legislation at all.
That's a great question, and you've asked me a question that I can't exactly answer. We just enacted an updated GI Bill for educational benefits for all veterans who served since 9/11. And in those cases, service members who serve for 6 years and agree to serve for at least four more will be able to transfer their benefits to their spouses or to their children, and the benefits which they give for themselves will be considerable. We left in place the existing GI Bill benefits, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a telephone number, if I may, because I don't want to give you a wrong answer. My Nashville office number is this number, 615-736-5129. And if you'll call there tomorrow and ask for Kay or for Charlotte, either one of them will work with my Washington staff, and we'll try to find an answer to see, one, whether any of the existing GI benefit programs apply to you, or second, if there's a piece of legislation that I need to sponsor that would make you eligible for those benefits, or if the Warner Amendment has been unfair to you, whether it ought to be changed. So I appreciate the question. That's a new twist on it for me, and I'll go to work on it tomorrow if you'd be kind enough to call 615-736-5129.
Our next call is from Jason in Frankwing.
Thank you, Senator. This is Melanie. I'm a pre-K teacher in Tennessee, and I was wondering when the laws are going to be changed to include pre-K teachers, not just K through 12, so that we all get the same rights as far as duty-free lunch, planning time, BET funding. And I'd also like to know when you think the pre-K is going to be opened up to all children, not just the low-income children.
Well, thank you for the question. It's a special subject for me because I grew up in Maryville, Tennessee, and my mother had the only – this was long before we had any sort of state – preschool programs in Tennessee before Head Start, even the federal program. And my mother had the only nursery school and kindergarten in the county, I think, and it was in a converted garage in my backyard. So she had, or in her backyard, she had 25 3 and 4 year olds in the morning and 25 5 year olds in the afternoon. So I used to say I was the only United States Secretary of Education that spent 5 years in kindergarten because my mother had no place else to put me. I believe in the importance of preschool education. The answer to your question is most of those decisions have to be made by the governor and the local school district because the federal government doesn't decide those questions about education. As you know, about 93% of the funding for education and kindergarten through the 12th grade comes from the state and the local government. One innovation that I did have a chance to work on, which you might be interested in, was in the Head Start legislation, which passed this year. And the president had proposed that we give the money that was going to the Head Start programs, instead of giving it to the local Head Start units, that we give it to the state and then they give it to the local units. I didn't think that was a very good idea, so we kept it the way it was, but we added something called Centers of Excellence, which would permit Governor Bredesen, in Tennessee's case, to pick a couple of places in Tennessee which would become models for the rest of the state, maybe the country, and you could take the local money, the federal money, the state money, all the money that's being spent, there's quite a bit of it, to help children who are under the age of 6 and spend it in a more effective, coordinative way. When Head Start started, I mean, Head Start's $7 billion federal dollars every year, but they're $21 billion federal dollars for children under age 6. So I hope that would help create more opportunities for pre-kindergarten, for kindergarten programs and pre-kindergarten programs for the even younger children. Thanks so much for the question.
This is our last call, and for those of you who are still on the line, if you'd please stay on the line when Senator Alexander is done, you'll have an opportunity to leave a message for Senator Alexander, and we'll get back to you with the answer to your question. The last question is going to be from Muriel in Crossville.
Hello, Senator. This is Janet Brady. I'm Merle's wife, and we were wanting to ask you about you talked about electric vehicles, and we needed to know how we're going to be dealing with the infrastructure. Say an electric vehicle will only go so far, we need to be charging it, and you know how rural we are in certain areas. So it would be helpful if we had some place where we could charge the vehicle up a little bit to get home before we're going. So I was kind of wondering if there was going to be anything set up. I know that I prefer everything to be privately run because it works better, but we needed to know, you know, if there's anything going to be set up a little bit so we would be educated as to where we could get the electricity, say we were making a trip in an electric vehicle, but, you know, things need to be planned a little ahead.
Yeah, so that's a great question, a good last question. So what you're really saying is that you wouldn't want to get down in the middle of Grassy Cove and run out of electricity.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I push my car up a hill if I have to do that.
In fact, I walked through Grassy Cove when I walked across the state to be governor. Well, let me tell you how that would work. The way that works is this. Do you know about a Toyota Prius? Do you know a car?
Yeah,
a
hybrid. Sorry.
It's a hybrid car, so that means it has a gasoline engine in it and it has an electric engine in it.
Right, but
and they go back and forth. And right now, the electric engine's very small. It'll only take you about a mile and a half. So what it really does is when you stop at a stoplight, it just rests your motor, and it does save you some gasoline.
Right.
But what the new Toyota Prius will do is it'll have a bigger electric battery, and eventually, and GM is going to have something called the Chevy Volt, and Nissan's going to have an all-electric car, which I get to in a minute, but with the hybrid car, if you're in Grassy Cove and you've driven more than 30 miles and your battery runs down, it just switches to your gasoline battery. And so, and as long as you drive less than 30 miles a day, you don't use any gas. but because you're just using electricity. But if you drive more than 30 miles, why then the gasoline engine kicks in, and it's just like your regular car. It also charges your battery while the gasoline engine runs.
Right.
So about three quarters of the American people drive less than 40 miles a day. Now that's not going to be true in Cumberland County or a lot of rural Tennessee. You're going to
right.
drive maybe 80 or 100 miles a day.
Right.
But still, if you only drove 30 or 40 miles that you wouldn't use any gasoline, you could see how your gas bill would go way down.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen these cars and it's awfully simple. Instead of stopping at a filling station and putting the gas hose in your tank, you'd really just go home and plug a cord into the back of your car and charge your battery just like you do your cell phone. And it takes 3 or 4 hours. It's about the same amount of electricity that it would take to charge your water heater. So it'd be really inexpensive. And TVA has all the electricity we need if you plug it in at night. If we all plugged it in at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we might blow a few fuses. But if we plug it in at night while we're all asleep, they've got a lot of cheap power they'll sell us. So you'd save a lot of money. When you got down to Grassy Cove, you'd switch to your gasoline engine, and you'd use that until you got home.
Okay. All
so
right.
That's
Thank
it. And these cars are going to be available within about a year.
Well, thank you, sir.
And fortunately, they're not made by the government. They're going to be made by Toyota and General Motors and Nissan, which is now headquartered in Tennessee, has plans to be the largest manufacturer of electric cars in the world. So this sounds a little far-fetched, but once you stop and think about the fact that the big car companies are going to do this, and we have a lot of unused electricity at night, it's a good way to stop using oil and to make a big dent in those big gas prices. So I thank you for your question. And let me thank everyone for taking your time to let me interrupt your evening like this. I want to try this way of having a town meeting. And a lot of you have joined tonight. You've asked some terrific questions. I'm going to be doing it more often. I thank you very much for joining tonight, and I thank you for the privilege of serving as United States Senator. And if you'd like to, if you didn't get a chance to ask your question, if you'll stay on the line, you can leave a message for me, and I'll do my best to answer it. Thank you, and good night.